What does the land sound like? And how might that change over time? And how might a symphony orchestra create that evocative sound? That's a question for composer René Clausen. He teamed up with the Fargo-Moorhead Symphony for the premiere of his latest composition, Before the Whirlwind. Recently, Clausen described his work to a group of symphony enthusiasts.
The name of the piece is called Before the Whirlwind, which is kind of an evocative title, I mean, right from the opening. I mean, what does that mean? I was thinking, after I had spoken earlier on about doing this commission, well, what would I like to write about? I think was the first question anytime you're writing a larger work and of more significant length. You're trying to decide on either a libretto, if it includes text, or what's the subject material. And the thought ran through my mind that it would be fun, somehow, to write a piece that's about this region, right here in the Red River Valley. So that was the kind of first idea that came to my mind. That'd be kind of an interesting topic to write music about. And the next thing is, well, what do you write about the Red River Valley? How do you create music around that subject? And so I just kind of kept ruminating and noodling on it over a period of time. And I don't know if you call it inspiration or not. I think composition is mostly, the inventors say, 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration. It's mostly a lot of hard work. But what came to me, and I don't remember exactly how, was to think of this region not as a contemporary community right now, but what was the land, this region, like over periods of geologic time. So that's what Before the Whirlwind is about. I'm not going to tell you how it opens, but that it's unusual. And you will hear some sounds probably that you've never heard before. Maybe after you hear it, you'll say, well, I never want to hear that again. it is a piece that is it's about 34 minutes long in one continuous movement, but it begins with the first section I call the land primordial. So if you can imagine nothing being here in this region, we're talking about millennia ago. After that opening 2 minutes, then on a very unusual instrument that you don't find much in orchestra, comes our soloist Russ Peterson, who opens the whole thing. And so Russ, are you ready? If you can put in your mind, just in your mind's eye, the picture of vast nothingness, being outside and really relating to nothing. There's nothing really that surrounds you. That's what I mean by the land primordial. You see how he mournfully sings through that line. And I'm hoping that gives you a little evocation of what this opening is about. It has kind of mournful quality, lonely. The soprano sax has a couple different ranges, and even in that opening solo, you found some different colors that Russ is capable of with his instrument. So for the first couple of sections of the piece, and I said the first section, the primordial land, moves then into this the next section that's labeled the glaciers. And so we kind of move from one epoch, one geological period, to another. It was an interesting thing to try and depict glaciers. You know, how do you write music about glaciers?
Slowly.
is a good response. And that's actually kind of what happens. But there are two things that were in my mind, and that is glaciers move with immense power, right? Probably an inch in an epoch, perhaps, but with that slow tidal movement of huge, huge masses of ice. And I decided to just Google it and see what would happen if I said glacial sounds or glacier sounds. And I didn't know what I was going to come up with at all. And actually, there was a couple different recordings of glaciers and their movement, and what I noticed in particular was that you'll hear this rather dusky sound, and then all of a sudden you hear crack, okay, and that's what you're going to hear. It may scare you. Where something is moving along, and then rather noble sounds, really, between the French horn and the trumpet, who are just really creating music that is just makes you feel of large titanic movement, okay? And then quite out of nowhere, you hear the bass drum and the timpani and the rest of the orchestra out of this calm movement, you hear literally, whap! And the orchestra will strike these chords as if they were making a crack in the ice. And they come in very unpredictable ways. Then we'll move along again for a bit and undulate through some kind of rolling atmospheric chords. And then all of a sudden you hear it again. But then you might hear it twice in a row. Or, you know, rather unpredictable way. Following the glacier section, what happens then is the big glacier melted and formed Lake Agassiz, right? And I always thought that's what it was. But that was actually named in 1879 by a Swiss geologist, okay? So we're talking about a relatively short period ago that great lake was named Lake Agassiz, actually not by American, but at all. The guy who wrote some text here, you may be familiar with Roy Hammerling, so a friend of mine and a philosopher and medievalist at Concordia, and I've collaborated with him on other texts. And he did some research into what we call Lake Agassiz. But as I said, this is a relatively new title. The Native Americans who were here didn't call it that at all. It was called the Mighty Lake, okay? I won't tell you much about that section, except for this is the first time you hear the chorus sing text. And it is about the very colorful words and very colorful imagery about what was going on at this time as the glaciers melt into the lake. Following that, I think in retrospect, I named this next section the buffalo, which actually comes in three parts. Noble and majestic, if you imagine seeing 1,000 buffalo grazing at a distance, it creates that kind of atmosphere. But, you know, I really didn't want to leave it there. Then I thought, what I really want to end this with is a stampede. Okay. What an exciting thing to write for, but you know, to create a stampede. But so how am I going to get to the stampede from all this nice grazing? So I have the middle section of that section is called the standoff. And it is two buffalo, these majestic beasts, standing off to angrily towards each other. And then what happens is that dissolves. All of that gets very angry sounding as they steam at each other. I always think of the, you know, in the NFL football games and they have those two helmets that clash, you know what I mean, at the beginning? Yeah, this is kind of what's happened, is they get really angry. And then that's the lead-in that goes into the stampede, which is some of the most fun music. Bass drum and another bass drum and something called the thunder sheet and the piano and in the lowest octave, and it is really, really quite dramatic. But now we come to something really fun and really special. It's one of my favorite moments in the concert. And actually the whole last 10 minutes, I would say 10 or 11 minutes, is called the Native Americans. They followed from the West. The Native American population followed the buffalo from the West and settled in this area. And this is actually where the piece ends, is with the arrival of the Native Americans. It's quoted with a lot of folk tunes. There's a narrator in this part that tells a rather beautiful story using a lot of story imagery from the especially Ojibwe tradition. And this all begins very quietly. There'll be some string sounds that just kind of think it's kind of like a pregnant moment. What's going to happen right now? And then you hear, almost off in the distance, and this is, listen especially to Deb Harris, who I wrote this section especially for. Her office is right next to mine at Concordia, and I said, I'm going to write something special. Well, it happened that she had this beautiful wooden Native American flute, and the truth is, I didn't write anything for her. She just plays it. She just makes up stuff as she goes along. And I think, Deb, you have, is it seven pitches? Six pitches. And so what I did is I took those six pitches and I put them in the strings so this everything would work together. But then, for just over a minute, she improvises beautifully on this Native American flute. So
it's really very fun to be able to whip this out on the symphony stage. I bought this flute about 20 years ago when I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I bought it from a Native American musician who made flutes. And it's made out of cedar, and it's very beautiful. It's actually what we call a pentatonic scale. If you don't know what that is, if you just, not exactly these notes, but if you played all the black notes on the piano, that's what a pentatonic is. And if you put the pedal down and play all the black notes, all those notes sound really beautiful together. So you really can't play a wrong note on this thing, which is really cool. But when I bought it because I thought it was so beautiful, and you know, I'm kind of a flute geek, but I never in a million years thought I'd be playing it on a symphony stage. So thank you so much for writing for it.
Was composer René Clausen. Before the Whirlwind will receive its first public performance this Saturday at 7:30 at NDSU's Festival Concert Hall, it will feature the FM Symphony, FM Choral Artists, and the NDSU Concert Choir. Tickets range from $14 to $18.